Hello and welcome to A Mic on the Podium with me, Michael Seal. Today I will be conducting a conversation with a Dutch conductor who has held numerous posts as music director all across Europe. He is currently principal guest conductor of both the Prague Symphony Orchestra and the Ulster Orchestra in Belfast. He is very committed to teaching, having been a professor at the Royal Conservatory in The Hague since 1992, and he also loves working with youth and student orchestras. It is a great pleasure to welcome Jack Van Steen. So, welcome, Jack. How wonderful to talk to you.
Wonderful to talk to you, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I wonder whether we could start with your very, very earliest musical experiences.
My very, very early musical experiences. I think coming back to sort of my sixth or seventh year, where I was pretty much the tallest of my class in primary school. And I remember I lost it. Otherwise, I would have used it now after sort of 56 years to use it as my main photo in all biographies and program books, because it is a photograph of me conducting with a pencil. I mean, who does a pencil nowadays? We know a few.
Yes, that's true, yeah. Or a toothpick.
Or a toothpick or a small pencil. Well, I had a pretty large pencil given to me by the headmistress, and it was in front of Santa Claus conducting a bunch of 12, 13, 14 kids using samba bals, glockenspiel, xylophone, you know, all these instruments of the Orff instrumentarium. And I can't remember what it was, but that was my first musical conducting. I still remember it as a fantastic moment of music making, and then forgot about it till when I was 20, sort of. So that was the first time. But to be serious, my parents met after the Second World War, and funnily enough, they were very keen on German Schlagers.
They were, Schlagers are hit records, aren't they, in Germany?
Yeah, but then in German language, mind you, and it was all, you know, from south of Germany in the mountains till very, very easygoing love songs, easygoing, silly, funny things. And at those times, you know, the 3 minute thing, like nowadays the Zap service, was already there in the Schlagers. And that was my first sort of biotope where I was completely overwhelmed with that music and a bit of operetta. And I remember that as an issue, because I hate it now, and I never touched down on operetta or Schlagers my whole life. But on the other hand, it gave me a lot of flexibility in, you know, I played Bach on the piano, which was completely awful for my parents, but they supported their only child. And I played the serious stuff, and during the day, out of the loudspeaker of the radio, the Schlagers came. That is a big contrast, but that was my first start of the music.
So was your first instrument the piano?
Yeah, I started out of that Schlager tradition, playing the accordion very well as a young boy, and invited to play on you know, parties, weddings, a bit like an element of, oh, he is the musician in the family. And the father of my mother was a conductor for chorus and harmony and brass bands, and I was supposed to sort of step in that tradition, but on a very, very, very low level for everybody, just making party music. And that was a special, if I come to think of it now, as you ask me the question, because I hardly go back to that time of my life. It was a special thing to become flexible and to respect other types and genres of music that I would never play myself. And then I started to play the organ in church. And that was was the biggest contrast with the Schlager music, playing all the, in this case, in the south of Holland, Catholic masses. And in that time, we were allowed to play Mozart, and we were allowed to play all the music, and especially a lot of Bach. And I intended to go to play the organ and do some auditions for college. That was the first step before conducting.
So whilst you were playing the organ at church, is this where you first encountered choirs and possibly your first encounters conducting?
Choirs, yes. Conducting, not yet, as I was simply, I could sight read enormously well. So I was simply living a bit in a split psychic situation, because what I can tell you now is that I was very, very, very a saint in the weekend and played the organ. But after Mass, I went to a very, very, very heavy rock band and played the organ there. And that contrast can't be bigger. But it was never about conducting in church, because we had some very good choral conductors, and I was just playing the organ. And in the evenings, I played in cafes and jazz clubs till my 17th, 18th year. I did that combination of the two completely separate worlds.
Separate worlds, yes, but it's still music. And obviously music was a very big part of your growing up, whether it be secular or sacred.
It was everything, because obviously, especially the last thing, the pop band, the rock band, took up a lot of time. And I just made it in secondary school when I was 18 to finish my exams. Okay, it was nothing like the utmost A level, but it was very good, but not top of the bill to study something else, because I knew I want to go to music, and I played a lot. And playing in churches and playing in a rock band took up all my time instead of studying maths and Greek and Latin.
So after school and your time playing in church and the rock and pop band, did you go to university?
In Holland, the system is that you directly audition for the conservatory. And I went to the nearest, living in the south of Holland, I went to one of the big conservatoires in the south. And then I intended, as everybody advised me, not to go for piano and organ, because it wouldn't bring a living. It wouldn't sort of, you wouldn't earn too much. And in after the Second World War, it was very important to get a job. I mean, it's always important to get a job, I think, but you know what I mean. After that time, everybody was keen on working very hard on getting a job. And they advised me to go for being a teacher, a music teacher. And that was immediately after my exams in secondary school. I could go to the conservatory, the conservatoire in Brabant in the south. And there I started for about 6-7 months to study, as we call it, school music. That's everything for primary schools and secondary schools. And discovered pretty soon that what I thought would be useful is sitting behind the piano and talking about composers, Bach and Wagner and Bruckner and whatever, Mahler and Shostakovich in that time was already very popular. Instead of that, I got to learn how to keep a classroom quiet, which I thought I could do anyway, because you talked about your enthusiasm for music. And then I thought, no, this is not the thing. I thought it would be more of a wider spread experience for myself. But it was very about education and didactical issues, which I didn't think at that time, being still a bit of a rock star. Not really. No, I had a pretty strong opinion that this was not the right thing to do, which, I mean, my teachers in secondary school were really doing that. They were fantastic musicians, chorus masters. They had an orchestra in school conducting very badly, but they did it. And they were so enthusiastic about music. And that made me enthusiastic about music as well. And not the fact that I know how to teach a kid what is the difference between a fifth and a fourth.
Do you think at any stage in your conducting career you've used any of those skills on how to keep a classroom quiet with an orchestra?
Well, the thing is that either you, like the first steps when I was 6 or 7, standing in front of a group, either you have a natural sort of body language in front of a group. It can be a classroom, it can be an orchestra, it can be a chorus, or it can be even a team of big egos in a football club. I mean, I don't think that is very different. But if you show that you have a natural sort of oversight on that group of people, then it is not so difficult to accept that you can lead them somewhere. And not because you are a dictator and you want to show only your opinion, but you want to do something together with them. And that's not different was in that time, not different in the classroom or an orchestra or a chorus. So the step from bigger groups towards the studying of orchestral conducting was not too big for me.
Very true indeed. I think if you have the powers of persuasion and the powers to cajole people to work together, it doesn't matter where you're doing it. If you have that ability, then it's a wonderful thing. So how long into your studies into being a music teacher did conducting really start to take over as something you thought, you know what, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, very early in the first year, as I told before, I didn't believe in the system of school music and teaching. I met now a dear friend, I don't know how it is in England, but you go to a cafe, you go to a pub when you're young, and you drink and you have a chat. And then someone told me, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm studying school music. And he said, well, I'm studying orchestral conducting. And I had no clue where he was talking about. And we had another drink. And in the end of the evening, he said, well, I have a lesson tomorrow. Why don't you join me? And to cut a very long story short, he left school. He was a fantastic guitar player, left school to become a puppeteer. And in that same year, and I took over the one position, his position, as he was the only student of my teacher. And in the 70s, it was absolutely possible, which is not nowadays anymore, not so easy at least. I could study 3 studies parallel. So my teacher tried to stop, said, you know, you don't conduct, you never will make it, you will be absolutely not up to it. It's far too hard, far too demanding. It is such a dangerous study to step in to earn a living. And you have to do something else. So I advise you, if you want to come and study with me, then start studying theory of music, which I did. And then as choral conducting was so close to orchestral conducting for me, coming out of that, what you just mentioned before, the organ music, and it was not about conducting church music, but it was sort of knowing that music, that I was enabled to do a third major subject, which was choral conducting. And my 3 teachers knew each other very well, and they were all very helpful to, especially the second, the choral one and the theory of music one, to support my studies into the direction of orchestral conducting. So if I did choral pieces, I didn't, I studied Josquin des Prez and Palestrina and whatever, but my main topics were works for chorus and orchestra, like Symphony of Psalms or Stravinsky's Mass or a Mozart or a Haydn Mass. And my theory subject was the orchestration of Mozart in his operas. And all those elements of the studies focused on that one study, and it took me 7 years in the end to finish the 3 studies at the same time. I did final exams in 1 week, but it was so easy to do it in 1 week because the choral subject was bound to go to the orchestral side, and the theory of music was supporting my orchestral studies. So it was for me just one study with 3 fantastic masters to learn from.
And during your orchestral or choral studying lessons, Were you taught stick technique at all, or was it mainly about form and architecture and absorbing and learning a score?
Both. It was an idea. If I come to think of it now, it was an ideal combination of my orchestral teacher being the musician, being a teacher, a conductor, conducted every week. He had an orchestra in Holland, in the south, in Maastricht. He was doing some touring, not much. That is an aspect that changes a lot nowadays. But in the middle of the, and before that, middle of the last century until about 1990, it was absolutely very important that the chief conductor of an orchestra was there sort of 30 weeks a year. And he formed the orchestra and he worked with the orchestra. I know there are aspects of that element that are not so beneficial for both sides. But nowadays, having a chief conductor who comes in for 6 weeks and you don't see him the rest of the season is the opposite, is the polar opposite of that idea. So my teacher was a practical conductor for orchestras, a big musician, learned me a lot of the repertoire till 1950s, because after that he thought music was completely a waste of space. Which was interesting because he knew he was a Francophile. He was brought up with French language and he was a friend of Poulenc, and he brought me up in the terms of learning to appreciate Ravel's orchestration, and Debussy was a hero. And of course, the earlier ones starting with Beethoven. But the choral conductor was the one who sent us home with exercises. And the exercise was, coming to think of it, step on your bike with your legs beat 2, with your left hand on the steering wheel beat 3, and 5 with your right hand. He was the technician. He could teach us how to be completely technically independent left and right. And from that technique, I still benefit. Although you never in front of an orchestra, as you know, you are a conductor yourself. If you conduct Petrushka and Stravinsky writes his septola over a bar, you don't give left 7 and right 3 and whatever. You have the technique to do it, but you don't. You, the orchestra wouldn't even watch you, and they would be completely confused if they would. Mm. So that technique you never use practically in real life, but it is good for the body to be completely schizophrenic and know how to deal with different rhythms, although you don't conduct them. But I learned that by working with that choral conductor.
I'm trying to get my head around you cycling home, conducting 2 different tempos in 2 different arms whilst your legs are pumping away in 2 in a bar. I find that fascinating. I wish we had video of it.
The first thing you have to accept is that Holland is completely flattened out, so you don't have anything else than just one path for kilometers. And the other thing is you have to learn first how to cycle without using your hands on the steering wheel. So, and it is possible. I can't do it now anymore. I just bought a new bike. And I try to do that, but I can't anymore. So it is possible to do 2 in a bar with your legs, 3 with your left arm, and 5 with your right arm. It is possible. I challenge you to try.
Can you tell us how you transitioned from university and started working as a professional conductor?
I was lucky. As I mentioned before, my orchestral teacher was a very busy man, and I was lucky to rehearse every week, 2 times a week, most of the weeks, when he couldn't come to the conservatoire, as he didn't live in the same city. So he didn't bother about rehearsing in those weekly sessions. And he came 1 week at the end of a term and started to work for himself what I prepared for him. And I got concerts because sometimes he couldn't do it, or he gave me an overture, or my exam was with the school orchestra. In that time, it was already like I sort of intimate my students now. It was already en vogue to organize bigger ensembles. And Holland was in that time very famous for ensembles of about 16, 17 musicians, a bit the London Sinfonietta model, or Musikfabriek in Düsseldorf, or Klangforum Wien, all those, and Ensemble Intercontemporain, don't forget the best one, I think, or the most challenging one, with Boulez. We copied that, and I had an ensemble of 16, 17 colleagues, friends in school, and we played all the chamber music for bigger ensemble that had to be conducted. And that was my first sort of concert life, already during my studies, because bigger orchestras were not waiting for us, but you could profile yourself by doing concerts in smaller venues, and playing, you know, Groupe de Six, the Britten stuff, the Nonettos, the Dixtettos, all those, the Mozart serenades, that's what we did. And a lot of new compositions. And after that, I got the opportunity to become assistant conductor of the National Youth Orchestra. And in that time, the National Youth Orchestra, the chief conductor was Adam Gatehouse. I think he's retired now, but he was the last 10, 15 years responsible for the New Generation Artists BBC scheme. A very, very good musician and a very good organizer. And he made our Dutch National Youth Orchestra, I think, at the same level as nowadays the British National Youth Orchestra, the English National Youth Orchestra. So he invited me to become his assistant, and part of the deal was that I got one concert. Instead of him conducting, I got the Rite of Spring and Debussy Prélude à l'Après-midi d'une Faune in sort of an afternoon concert. And at that concert was the director of the orchestra in Arnhem, and Hans Hierik is his name. He's a famous character in Holland. And he gave me the first concert with his orchestra, being a concert that I took on as, it was a carnival concert. It was the sort of going back to entertainment. It was nothing posh, it was nothing big, it was just the right thing to learn from. I got his orchestra for 2 days and did a silly, light, poppy music. And after that, Holland is very small and my career went off because every orchestra heard about that. And then I went to the orchestra in the south. I went to Maastricht, I went to Amsterdam, I went, etc. So there were, in those days, about 15 orchestras in Holland. And I'm still grateful for that man, for Hans, because he gave me the first opportunity. And since then, I got to conduct the orchestras, except the Concertgebouw. I conducted all the orchestras in Holland in that time.
Don't you think that those early concerts, the ones, as you said, the poppy, lighter concerts, don't you think they're some of the hardest concerts you ever have to conduct when you, rather than just doing an overture, a concerto and a symphony, you end up conducting 14 little pieces of music, all in different styles, all in different tempos, all with their separate problems, corners to navigate. Don't you think they're the hardest things you ever get to conduct? And weirdly, you get them at the start of your career.
Yeah, you're true. You have that experience yourself because you are very good at the complexity of different styles and different settings and different orchestrations. I think I agree, although after that, at a certain moment, like conducting a ballet, which is also very hard to do it really well, I don't know exactly if that is a European thing, but it is considered as not so important to conduct the lighter stuff, and it is considered not to be so highbrow, high level if you conduct a Sleeping Beauty by Tchaikovsky in a ballet performance. But I'm convinced, as you say, that those elements of our conducting are sometimes far more difficult to organize and to structure and to make it work than doing one sort of 1.5 hour symphony, which is not easy at all, but a Mahler symphony is a different thing. But I agree that you get them in the beginning of your career. And to be honest, the most difficult thing I've ever conducted was music in a program by Gerald Hoffnung. And I think the youngsters now, my students, I spoke to them last week about Gerald Hoffnung as a cartoonist. And everybody knows the famous cartoon where the corps anglais sort of gives birth to an egg coming out of the instrument. And there are about 150 cartoons. But what people don't know is that he organized a concerto for conductor. A famous composer, François Chagrin, which is the most fantastic name for a composer. I think it is a pseudonym for some silly man working at radio in England, pretending he was a French composer, and he wrote a concerto for conductor. And in that concerto, you had to learn a choreography and do things that you are not allowed, that I wouldn't teach my kids when they come in class. For example, there was an act that you had to pretend there was a fly around your baton, and you start beating with your left hand to try to get rid of that fly, that insect. And the orchestra obviously had to react on that. And this is a 20-minute concerto for conductor. And the most difficult thing is I spent 3 months on learning that score from memory, because you had to do sort of a choreography ballet-y thing to walk into the orchestra if you wanted to conduct the brass. And if I come to think, I never forget the moment that he writes, Hoffnung writes, now you go to the harp, and he or she, and I hope it is she, he wrote in the score, with long blonde hair, plays a beautiful cadenza, and you go on your knees, you keep conducting the orchestra as an accompaniment, you go on your knees, and you give her your love, and you show that you fall in love with her, which is a thing that might happen in real life as well. And so I studied that, and I prepared it in my room, and I had a friend of the ballet company to help me, to assist me, and he choreographed me. And then I came in front of that orchestra, and I looked at stage right, and I saw the harp, and it was not a blonde girl, it was a young lady, almost retired, completely non-communicative, and I had to go in the rehearsal already to go to that woman of 64 years young, and there I was falling in love with a 64, and I was 28 or something. So from that moment on, I had all the credits from the orchestra to do whatever I wanted, because they thought, man, if you can do that, to fall in love with a 64-year-old woman, then you are a genius. So those things you had to do. And it's not prostitution of your profession, but you just have an experience.
So at this stage, you're now guest conducting all around Holland. At what stage are you thinking to yourself, I would quite like to be a music director somewhere? Was it a thought that you had, or were you just happy guest conducting and seeing where it all took you?
Well, the awareness of a chief position wasn't necessary, as I got the opportunity to do an audition, and I didn't know the impact of the job at all, to do an audition for the Dutch National Opera. And the Amsterdam Opera nowadays is world famous for their adventurous and beautiful, and it's big, and it's a new building, and the new building was just about ready. And they appointed Hartmut Hähnchen. And Hartmut Hähnchen, coming from East Germany, and though it was such a difficult situation for him to get out of that country. And in 1989, the wall came down, and there he was, Hartmut Hähnchen, a very, very good conductor, especially in opera work and in Mahler and in Haydn. He had an orchestra specialist in Haydn and Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. So he was the chief conductor, and he needed, on the German way, an assistant. And meaning, I say on the German way, in the German way, because he needed a pianist as well. So we went with three young Dutch conductors, and I was the only pianist. There was a cellist, a clarinet player, and myself. And Hartmut was there, and he didn't take one of us because he thought we were not good enough as a pianist. And at that very moment, the position with the National Ballet, where Adam Gatehouse was chief conductor, Adam Gatehouse, remember, National Youth Orchestra?
Mm, yes.
So he said, are you interested in taking over my job? And as I got the no from Hartmut, and we became very good colleagues afterwards, obviously. But having his no, that opened a complete new world for me as I got the job as principal conductor for the Dutch National Ballet. And so the way of thinking about a chief position never came up to me, because it was a natural thing to get a job anyway. And in the 90s, it was not so much about, I want that position. I just wanted to make music, which was going fine. And from that moment on, as Hartmut came to Holland, he was looking for an agency, and he was connected to my now agent, Marianne Herzberger, and she took up Hartmut in her big sort of stable of conductors and musicians. And Hartmut, he said no to me, but Marianne said, well, I hear things about you, shall we work together? And from that moment on, which is now about 30 odd years, I have one manager already my whole life. And Hartmut left, and he went sort of, his career went to different side after his Amsterdam period, and I stayed with her, and from that moment on she looked after me, and I started with the Dutch National Ballet.
So during your career you've been music director or principal guest conductor with many symphony orchestras, but also you've done quite a lot of opera and ballet. What would you think the biggest differences are between running an opera house and running a symphony orchestra as music director?
Well, I was the lucky one to get a position in a German opera house. And you can't see my face now because lucky one is not quite covering what I meant. It is the opposite. In a German situation, if you are like myself, if you are appointed as general music director, your partner in contract is the mayor of the town, in this case Weimar, and later in Dortmund. So that means that you are responsible as a general music director for the musical world within that city or within that town. And that means that your idea of a chief position of making 75% music and learning the operas and doing work in the opera house about music, and 25% is about bureaucracy. Reality taught me that after 1 year in Weimar, I discovered it is the other way around. You are making music 25%, 30%, and 70% you are dealing with meetings with the politicians, meetings with the board, meetings with the union, meetings at receptions, meeting with the sponsors, which was in that time not a big thing in Germany, as the orchestras were very well funded by government and city or town. So that was a bit of a change in my attitude, as you worked about 16 hours in the opera house. You did a morning rehearsal with the orchestra, then went into meetings, and then you mainly did either a rehearsal or a performance in the evening, and that for 6 days. That is the normal life of a general music director. In concert life, if you compare that, the whole complexity of an opera house, I mean, don't forget, we had about 400 people on the payroll in Dortmund, and also starting with the concierge when you came in, then the technicians, then the light department, then the set designers, then the ballet company, then the chorus, then etc. And everybody has a responsible boss above them. And you are above those six, seven directors of the different parts of the opera house. Now, that is an issue that you have to learn to deal with. And in concert life, you completely can leave out the fact that you have five or six little kings, kingdoms in the house, because you focus on the concert. Of course, nowadays you have a big marketing department, and you need a financial department, and you need a health and safety department. But the complexity of an opera house makes that your real conducting life is limited, if you want to do it right. So I was completely worn out after 6 years in an opera house, as it is such hard work not conducting, which is not where we were brought up with. I'm a musician, and I'm not a financial expert.
Wow, that's been a real eye-opener for me, that it takes such an awful lot of time doing the non-musical things. I was aware that there was an element of that, but not to that degree. That's amazing.
Yeah, I the German system is fantastic for opera. Every self-respecting village with a little theater has an orchestra and an opera company. It might not be a Wagner opera you do, but there's a lot of other stuff you can do. But the amount of responsibility you have to take, and you have to be representative for the music part of that city. So it's very interesting. And I think I'm not a good game day general music director in that terms. I can make music, I can let it sound well. But if I see my colleagues and friends still surviving in Germany, they are better general music directors in the total aspect of it, because it is a profession you can't learn in a school or a conservatoire. You have to learn it by experience, and I hated it, and therefore I think my reaction after my Dortmund, which is 20 years working in Germany in 2013, was for the next few years, I'm not going to take up any principal position. I want to be a guest conductor related to orchestras, like you have the beautiful principal guest title, like I have now in Prague and Northern Ireland. A bigger difference in culture is not possible. But then you don't have the responsibility for the money. You don't have the responsibility for the well-being of your musicians, because you come in sort of as a guest. You know them because you come regularly, but you have no responsibility other than making the best of the concert.
I want to pick up on something you've just said. As you said, your principal guest conductor in Prague and also in Belfast with the Ulster Orchestra, you said that there is no bigger difference in culture that you can think of. Can you let us into your knowledge of how different orchestras in different parts of Europe work? So let's say between Prague and between Belfast, what would you think the biggest differences are musically when you stand in front of them, how they work, how they rehearse, how they react to you?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. That is part of my life, as when I got the position in Germany, parallel to that, or a bit earlier even, I started working in the UK. And the German tradition of playing in an orchestra and the British tradition is completely different. And me being Dutch, literally, geographically, I was in between. I am still in between. I don't conduct so much anymore in Holland, because diary is what it is. And I work a lot in Vienna and Prague, and a lot in the UK. And I try to combine the best elements of the one culture, bring those elements to the other side of the ocean in this case. And in short, if I try to explain, first of all, the time pressure of the work in the British countries doesn't exist in the Central European countries. if I compare, for example, to make it simple, preparing a concert in Prague, I start on a Friday morning reading the scores that you have to do the next week. Then there is a free weekend for the orchestra. Orchestra members will go and have a gig somewhere else to earn some extra money, but the Prague Symphony has a free weekend. On Monday morning, you continue, and on Wednesday and Thursday are the concerts. In that time slot of a Friday morning till Friday morning a week later, a British orchestra will have done a children's concert, a pops concert, a classic concert with Mozart and Haydn, and your concert. So the time you have to rehearse a Central European orchestra is enormously abundant. Okay, you have to work them very hard, and you have to work all the rehearsals you work, but in Belfast, I can do a program, I can do two programs in the time of one program in Prague. That is one difference. Orchestras in the UK are very quick, very fast. Now, the advantage of being so long with one orchestra means you can form them in your own soundscape, or the soundscape they bring and you want to work on that. You can go in details. You can spend half an hour on a few bars. That doesn't matter because you have time. And the utmost situation where you have a lot of rehearsals is Cheli Bidac, the Romanian conductor in Munich. If he did a Bruckner symphony and, you know, you and I get a rehearsal time of six rehearsals and a dress rehearsal, or five with that orchestra and a dress rehearsal, he would ask 18 rehearsals and he would work them till every detail. And you can hear it. Mm. If you go to Belfast for a Bruckner symphony, you start on a Monday and on Wednesday is the concert. And it doesn't mean it is not as good as Prague or Munich or Weimar. But it is a different attitude of where you start rehearsing them. That is a big difference. So as a conductor, especially if you are a bit younger, in the British situation, you get not so much time to get accustomed to the timings, to the music. You have to be prepared utterly well because you can't grow as an orchestra grows from Monday morning till Wednesday evening. In the German situation, I mean, I had rehearsals on a Monday morning, then do something else on a Monday evening, had a rehearsal on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday morning, a Thursday morning, a Friday a dress rehearsal, and then a Saturday the concert. And that's not because the orchestra do not want to work, but that is the timing of let it sink in and let us work out. We're all having our salaries. We are all having our fixed positions. That is an enormous difference in music making.
You mentioned earlier that one of your first positions was assistant conductor with the National Youth Orchestra of Holland. I know because I've worked with you, what is it now, two or three times with the CBSO Youth Orchestra, that you still enjoy and still like to work with youth orchestras. I know some conductors do not work with youth orchestras. What do you get from working with youth orchestras and why do you love it so?
Yeah, there is a reason why I conduct youth orchestras. Even more stressed is that I ask my manager, Marianne, to book me once a year a youth orchestra, an orchestra in a college or Cheetham, the very, very young, or the Wells Cathedral School. I ask her if it is possible to conduct 1 week a year, and sometimes it's even two. One of the reasons is that, of course, you can pass on your knowledge and your tradition and your experiences. The other thing is that it keeps me completely fit. You have three rehearsals a day, which is hardly possible in the professional life for obvious reasons. I mean, you can't with professional orchestras on that level work three times a day on one program. you know, it needs time to sink in. But with youth orchestras, you need to work three sessions a day, and that for 6 or 7 days. The other reason is also a bit of a selfish reason. You have to know every moment of the music how you want it. So it forms yourself as a conductor enormously if you have to explain it to others who have no clue how a Brahms symphony works. Well, they can play their fiddle and their clarinet and their flute or whatever. But to make it really sound like Brahms or Bruckner, that's a different thing. So it is part of going into yourself and reflecting on why do certain things that if you stand in front of Philharmonia goes easy and they just do it because they've done it with Klemperer and they've done it with Andris Nelsons and with Esa-Pekka. And then you come and it is 1 hour and the Ravel Daphnis is ready. Or Messiaen, Turanga Lila. But with youngsters, you have to bring in every aspect of orchestral playing, of teaching them how to play together, of teaching them why they have to play together, and then the interpretation of the music. And that's a very, very healthy, almost cleansing aspect for a conductor, I think. And they give a lot of energy. And if you think now we have 3 rehearsals, they could do 1 more, which you can't at a certain moment. I tended to bring new music for myself to the youth orchestra. So if I would have done Tchaikovsky 4, 5, 6 a lot, I would say, okay, now you want to do Tchaikovsky? Fine, let's do number 2, because I've hardly ever done it. Nowadays, in my point of career, I bring scores that I've done more than 10 times to them. Not that I'm lazy, but that I can give them everything I know about that score, and I can teach them every corner they have to take to make the music work. And that is a fantastic experience.
It's very interesting that you say about passing on the knowledge, but also that you, there's an element, very, as you said, selfish element of the fact that you really do get to learn the scores or relearn the scores if you're taking music that you've already done in the past. People ask me, what do I get out of preparing the CBSO Youth Orchestra for a guest conductor such as yourself? And my answer to them is always, I'm learning repertoire or I'm relearning repertoire, and I'm having to teach it to the CBSO Youth Orchestra in such a detailed way that I could stand in front of any orchestra in the world, having spent 6 days preparing them for the likes of yourself or Abe Gardner or Andris Nelsons, and I would know every single corner of that score.
Yeah, I think that's an enormous privilege for us. And I respect colleagues who say, oh, it's not my cup of tea to work with youngsters. But you get so much energy back and so much love and so much attention. And the CBSO Youth Orchestra is one of the best.
You are one of the very few conductors who has a very active teaching career, and often when you go abroad to work, for instance, here in the UK, you will take one of your students with you as an assistant conductor. Can you tell us a bit about your teaching, how you teach, what your ethos is in teaching or your style, and also why you enjoy it so much?
Yeah, the teaching thing is, if you compare it to the youth orchestra topic, I get in interviews often asked the question, why do you teach? And people think I'm very altruistic, which I try to be. I try to pass on my knowledge about scores, but it is also a self-correcting element. If I teach a young conductor to do something in a famous score, I often have to think before I start teaching them, how do I do that myself? Then I see them do it and I think, hey, wait, why doesn't this work? So it's again a self-correcting element of learning a lot by teaching the youngsters. They do something and they stick out their sort of two fingers of the left hand constantly. And then I say, listen, every musician in the orchestra will get annoyed because you have your thumb up all the time and you're not aware of it. And then I think, hey, I tell this, but what do I do with my hands myself? So that's one aspect of the teaching. The other aspect is a very pragmatic one. When I stopped my studies in the Conservatoire in Holland, I finished my studies and got my my diploma. My teacher retired at the same day, and he did a speech to the audience. He had a concert, a farewell concert, and he said, I have a little present for you. And everybody thought, okay, we will get sort of his latest CD or whatever. And then I was sitting on row 2, I think, or row 1. And then he said, yes, I have a little present for you, ladies and gentlemen. And everybody, okay. And then he pointed his arm and he said, he's sitting over there. And he pointed to me and he said, I want him to be my successor in this fantastic school. So I got the teaching job. I was offered the teaching job in the conservatoire when I was sort of 27, 28. And I first refused because I thought, this is not for me. The people I've learned most from are experienced conductors over 60, blah, 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 and not youngsters. And I have to teach my colleagues, students? No, that doesn't work. The then director of the school said, well, if you don't take up that position, I lose the possibility of having a professor for teaching orchestral conducting. And that was not a threat. I could have said no, but I said, okay, in that case, I'll give it a try. And from that moment on, I stepped in a teaching job against my will, but was happy to oblige because after a year, I understood that I still was a step ahead of every student that came in. And that's how it started. And it never stopped because I think it's important for conductors to know what they are doing. It's such a complex métier. It is so hard. It's so widespread. It's about history, about psychology, about your body language, about technique, about music, about perfect pitch, about whatever. And that's all not important once you do a concert because the audience and the orchestra have to be thrilled by your interpretation. And all those aspects of teaching are then mediocre and they don't count. But at the same time, you have to learn them.
When you go abroad, as I said, you take an assistant conductor with you. What do you hope that they will get from a trip abroad with you that they don't get in their classes normally in Holland with you?
Yeah, the classes are with piano, which is a sort of an emergency exit because sometimes I teach in the completely silence and then they conduct. And with the piano, at least they have a reaction of two pianists in front of them and they have to control them. The benefit of bringing a student to a live situation with an orchestra is, for example, if I compare the Prague Orchestra, where I have my principal guest position, and the Belfast also orchestra with the same position, the Prague Orchestra is absolutely not prepared to give them 10 or 15 minutes in front of that orchestra. They think, no, you are there and you should be responsible for the rehearsals and the repertoire, mostly Mahler, is too difficult for a younger blah, blah, blah. The Belfast Orchestra, the Ulster Orchestra say, well, we would love to have him conduct 10, 15 minutes because then we get to know a new talent. We can discuss it in our team. Perhaps we can invite him for... So that's a different approach for my students. Now, the moment I have a student with me in Prague, he or she learns from that tradition, how they play a legato, how they... All the things I prepared in class on the piano. In Belfast, I can say, I have a Wagner overture, here's Tannhäuser, you go for it, you do that rehearsal for me. And from that experience of having 10, 15 minutes with the orchestra, I can work, when I come back in class a month later, I can work hours and hours on that one element of him or her conducting in front of a professional orchestra. And that is so enormously, I'm so grateful for both sides, the one orchestra that allows them to sit in and just sit in and assist and talk about it, and the other orchestra that gives them 10, 15 minutes per 2 hours rehearsal to experience what it is to play with a good professional orchestra.
They're very, very lucky students. Personally, I was lucky that my very first experiences were in front of my own colleagues, so they were a little bit more relaxed about, you know, a member of the CBSO conducting members of the CBSO. The flip side of that was, and still is, that they're probably the most frightening people I ever have to conduct, because they remember me as a 21-year-old violinist with all of his foibles and mistakes. Yeah. But at least, you know, I had a chance to sort of make big errors. And then they would talk to me about it afterwards and correct them, which is similar to what your students have. And they're so lucky, your students, to have that opportunity.
Yeah, true. What are the most funny things? One of the things is that with the Halle Orchestra, a telephone went off in early 90s during Brahms 4. And what happened was I had to stop, and I turned around and said something to the audience. And the next day, it was in all the tabloids on page 2 or 3, whatever. One side of the paper was the famous page 3, and the other side was Brahms interrupted by a telephone. But I think...
So, Jack, every participant is going to be asked the same 10 questions. And so I'd like to start with question 1. What sound or noise do you love, and what sound or noise do you hate?
Ooh. If I have to pick out one thing, to start with the noise I do hate, the one or two things that I... really hate, because a lot of noises nowadays that I hate, but one is making me complete, also making me a bit angry, is we call it in Holland muzak. Another thing is for what I love, and we live in a very, very remote area. It's not so easy to find the silent spot in Holland, but the sound of silence is magic to me. Silence is the best music I can think of.
Wonderful. If you had 24 hours free, what do you like to spend it doing?
That depends on where I am, because as you know, half of the time we are traveling around. So if I'm at home, I would step on my Icelandic horse and go for a ride. And that is more than just, you know, you have to prepare that. You have to prepare the horse. You have to warm up. You have to change. You have to have a drink afterwards. All that ritual that you do when you ride. I'm a fanatic Icelandic horse lover. That's what I do when I'm at home. But obviously, I can't do that much, because every week you are somewhere else. And if I think of, if I have a free moment, I can enormously enjoy just having a strong espresso and bring my book. I'm very lucky to love reading, and I just sit there for an hour, and in between reading, I watch people at a station or at an airport or in this busy street in London. I love watching people and making up stories. How would they think? How would they do? What would they like, etc.? That is my hobby.
What a super answer. Who would be your favorite conductor of yesteryear?
Ooh, I would say plural, as I have a lot of conductors that I respect from yesteryear. A beautiful word. I hear it for the first time, I must say. But I presume you mean from the past.
Yes, from the past.
As we are now, and my students know that very well, as we are now in the time of being able to experience from the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, the conductors via YouTube or another channel. I'm very keen. I never watched and never listened to music while studying or whilst conducting, because you have to conduct so much music yourself. But having said that, I think a master in interpretation and orchestral control and fantasy and love for music and fanatism to make it really special is Carlos Kleiber. The second on my list, and that's not to be chauvinist, but I'm for much of the Mahler and the Bruckner repertoire an enormous fan of Bernard Haitink. And if I go back a bit more in time, I think the biggest conductor in the US that I know the recordings of is Georg Schell. And a conductor that I appreciate enormously for a certain repertoire, an unforgettable Schubert Unfinished, is Benjamin Britten.
Oh, wow, wow.
And I can name another 10 because I respect a lot, which I won't do now, don't worry. But it is sort of a respect. But it is hardly ever disconnected from repertoire. Celi Bidake is Bruckner. Mm. Esa-Pekka Salon is Messiaen, is Stravinsky. You know, there are conductors that I also younger conductors, think, wow, you did a fantastic Rosenkavalier. Coming from a German tradition, and so the list can be endless, but it is a lot, has a lot to do connecting to the repertoire they conduct.
Well, that leads on to the next question. Who would be a favorite current conductor?
Favorite current conductor again is a thing that is liaised to the repertoire. I'm an enormous fan for a certain repertoire for Andries Nelsons. I think he is such a genuine, gentle artist, and I heard him about a year ago with the Vienna Philharmonic, and he did Bruckner 6, if I'm not mistaken. I heard so many music. It was amazing. It was thrilling with your ex-orchestra, CBSO, doing Tchaikovsky 5 on a tour. I was then music director in Dortmund. Unforgettable. Another conductor that I appreciate enormously because he works so hard with an orchestra to get his own sound right and interpretation-wise so detailed is Ivan Fischer.
Mm, yeah.
That's another one I would go for. That are my two heroes that I come to think of now very spontaneously.
What is the hardest work that you have ever conducted? It can be for any reason.
Yeah. Sometimes if something happens, like it's my mother died too early. She was 53, 54-ish. And the day she died, on a Friday afternoon, I had to conduct in the evening Strauss' 4 last songs. And I was very young. It was with the National Youth Orchestra. And that was for 15 years, very hard to conduct for me. And that's a different way of being hard to conduct than another aspect. So to finish that story first, I took Strauss' 4 last songs in my repertoire after 15 years. I couldn't simply do it out of respect and out of sort of memory. But in technical terms, not emotionally, I think the most difficult one is Harry Birtwistle's Earth Dances, which I could experience with the BBC Symphony, an orchestra that probably can do it standing on the head, as they did it with Jörg Voss and all the conductors who are specialists in that repertoire. I think in terms of technique and difficulty of conducting and getting the thing together is Earth Dances.
Well, Earth Dances, I have to tell you, was probably up there in my top three hardest pieces I ever played when we did it in the CBSO. Incredibly difficult to play. When travelling abroad to conduct, what item or items could you not leave home without?
I think I would never travel without a novel, and I would never travel without at least three pairs of shoes, mainly the same shoes. So I have shoes that I love so much. A Dutch designer made them, and I feel so comfortable in them that I have shoes for a rehearsal, and I don't use them to walk outside in the rain. I can't explain it, but I have always at least three pairs of shoes, not concert shoes, normal shoes in my suitcase.
A conductor has to look after their feet. If you don't look after your feet, standing up and conducting is absolute agony. So I think that's a wonderful answer. What is the one thing you would change about being a conductor?
I would go back to the situation that a chief conductor of an orchestra could stay at least per contract 20 weeks with that orchestra, and that is accepted by the orchestra members, by the board, by the audience. That would be my ideal. If I could change anything, I would get rid of flying in and out, and not because of the flying, but just the 1 week, and then you don't see your chief conductor in the town for 6-7 weeks or even longer, and then you do the next thing, and you are lucky to have a chief conductor who is more than 3 weeks in the season. That is a thing I would like to change, to get an identity with an orchestra attached to a conductor and vice versa. That would be my biggest wish.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I'm very fascinated by the medicine part of our society. So I would love, which I can't, I'm too clumsy for that, but I would love to be a surgeon.
And finally, if the world were to end tonight, what would be your choice of final meal and accompanying drink?
If the world would end tonight, I would now step in a plane. I would fly to the north of Norway, to Bodø, that is with Tromsø, the highest place you can fly to. And I would go to the fish restaurant in the harbor of Bodø, and I would order a fish platter with a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and then my life could end.
That's absolutely brilliant answer. Thank you, Jack, very, very much.
You're welcome.
Well, I have to say, Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we wish you all the very best, and I hope to see you personally very, very soon.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for such a nice conversation, and all the best, and see you soon.
Thank you again to Jack Van Steen. A Mic on the Podium was produced and edited by me, Michael Seal. The music is a recording by the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Louis Frémaux, of Jacques Ibert's Divertissement, available on Warner Classics. Thank you very much for listening.